The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Their designer templates let you easily create a unique and beautiful website that looks perfect on any device. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
In today's Football Weekly Extra, Champions League playoffs, Man U cruise past Bruges, while Wayne ends goal famine with a hat-trick. He's like London buses, because he's big, dressed in red, and will pick up your granny. We salute Celtic, who bravely conquer their place in the Europa League, talk transfers, City splash the green on Kevin De Bruyne, and will Jose get his sticky fingers on the stones? Plus, a big look ahead to the weekend's action in the Premier League and across Europe, coming up in this Football Weekly Extra. Hey everyone, welcome to your ears, Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
And Jacob in a smart shirt.
Hello.
Jacob Steinberg.
How's it going?
You're off to see Karen Brady this afternoon.
Amongst other things.
Right. Yep. That's very much the highlight, I would imagine. Mm. You're going to fit a little chat with Dimitri Payet in there as well.
Hopefully, yeah. Assuming he's there.
Yeah.
You never know with West Ham.
Right. Oh, okay. Anyway, well, I tell you what, let's talk West Ham a little bit later on. Because first of all, we're going to talk about all the exciting matches that have been happening since last we spoke. Matches like Wednesday night's big Bruges-Man United clash. So, 4-0 to United. Pretty emphatic stuff. Rooney with a hat-trick. United looking dominant. Are they back? Is he back? Was it fish in a barrel? Ian?
I think you'd want to go a little bit steady before we start saying Man United are back and Rooney's back. I mean, there were actually stages in the first half where it looked a little bit wobbly. Bruges were surprisingly perky for a team that seemed to have accepted their fate in the build-up. Crossbars were hit, balls were cleared away. And then one extraordinary run, I think, from Diaby just before the break, where he sort of rounded the keeper and still somehow contrived to screw it up. So it's not all there, but there is a growing sort of confidence in the way they're playing. I particularly like them when Schweinsteiger is there. They look a bit more comfortable with everything they're doing. And then, of course, there's Rooney. And they were three good, composed, confident finishes.
Absolutely. Anders Herrera had been widely invoked by supporters. Was he the difference for you?
It looked a little bit sketchy at first, but he sort of grew into it. I think I like him a lot. Honestly, I have no idea what Van Gaal doesn't like about him.
What doesn't he like about him, do you think, Barry?
I suspect he thinks he's possibly too much of a maverick talent for his system. That's my own personal theory, which could very well be so half-baked as to not pass muster on a very popular primetime television show. But
I won't be using it, don't worry. what do you think, Jacob?
Well, United fans like him because he plays forward passes. And
Right. What
we've seen so far from United is the ball going round and round and round without the killer touch. And there was an interesting excerpt from Pep Confidential, which was the book about Guardiola spending a season with him at Bayern Munich. Paul Breitner was talking about how perfect the football was under Van Gaal, and yet it was very, very predictable and it got a little too boring to watch. And I think we've maybe seen that a little bit at United, where if that system isn't working absolutely perfectly, it's going to be very hard to implement properly. And so you can see sometimes why he maybe doesn't like a player who's a little bit more anarchic, maybe breaks out of it, possibly why Di Maria didn't work, aside from other concerns about maybe just not really liking being in the north of England. So you can see at this moment there's not necessarily too many players who really run at a man to have a lot of pace beyond Depay. Perhaps there's only maybe room for one player like that, but I thought they were better in the second half when they had three in midfield and Schweinsteiger was alongside Carrick dictating it, and Herrera was a little bit further forward. I think he's possibly going to be a little bit more reliable than Januzaj in that position.
Okay.
And that's when they played their best football.
All right. We know what Louis van Gaal doesn't like about Chicharito in the meantime. His penalty taking.
I thought you could actually draw a lot of parallels between that game and the actual movie in Bruges.
Oh, right, okay.
Because you had violence in, you know, there was, I think, a bit of trouble between rival sets of fans at a pub in the city.
What was there?
For the game, yeah. There was comedy in the form of Chicharito's penalty and Van Gaal's reaction to it. And you also had a troubled hitman ultimately finding redemption, you know, Wayne Rooney.
Oh, so there you go, yeah.
You're just a racist alcoholic dwarf away from them being actually identical.
Got anything, Ian?
Really got to see this movie.
Right. Well, so Man United are flexing their muscles near Brussels. They're through to the draw, which hasn't happened yet, listeners. We don't know who they've got. You probably do.
The lucky listeners. I bet they've got PSV.
Yeah. All right. I tell you what else they've got, Barry. They've got Swansea at the weekend. Swansea at the weekend at the Liberty Stadium with you watching, Ian.
Yeah.
Pressure.
Yeah. Well, after last week's predictions went so well, and indeed Monday night's predictions.
Every prediction you've ever made.
Yep. The whole lot. I'll steer clear of making a shout on this, apart from to say it's going to be a very good game. Swansea are a team I like a lot.
Yeah.
I've ruined it, haven't I? Swansea have started very well. I did suggest last week that they would ride Sunderland like a pony,
yes,
and then they failed to beat them. But in fairness, they had about a million shots on target. I really don't understand how Swansea didn't beat them. And I think that's going to be a very, very tight clash, particularly if United are a little bit tired after their exertions.
Swansea did the double over United last season, didn't they?
They did. I was there for the corresponding fixture last season, where United actually played very well. It was about the first time in 2 months they played well, and they still contrived to lose it. But Swansea have bought really well in Gomez. They've got a striker who could take advantage of any kind of uncertainty there. Andre Ayew looks like an outstanding signing. They look a really good side, Swansea.
I think the difference with United's defence is that still, if you were to look at perhaps Blind at centre-back, you would think you could get at that team. But the difference, I think, between them this season and last season is that Schneiderlin is there, and you can see that with the way that Southampton have struggled a little bit. He makes such a difference. He makes defenders look a lot better with the way that he wins the ball, even if he's not been that noticeable so far.
And for all the doubts, they've only conceded 1 in 5.
No, absolutely. What do you think is going to happen? Are they going to concede? What's going to be?
You're going to push me to curse it. I think it will be a high scoring draw.
Really?
Yeah.
Jacob? Anything but a high scoring draw.
Yeah, 0-0.
Hey, also, since last we spoke, that crazy Arsenal Liverpool match at the Emirates. It was terrifically. I mean, this is kind of in support of Simon Burnton's theory that, you know, it doesn't take goals to make a game great. It was a 0-0, but it was fabulous. The first half, particularly. Both sides, I guess, would like to be considered contenders coming into it. Based on that match, did Liverpool look the more convincing?
Perhaps in the first half. I think that given what happened to Liverpool last season at the Emirates, and indeed what happened to both the course of the season, I think if they'd gone into that game not perhaps knowing that Gabriel and Chambers would be playing at centre-back, they would certainly have regarded a point as a good draw. In the context of the first half, it's certainly something they'll look back on and think that they should have won it, and it's an opportunity missed. But I think in the first half, you could see certainly a lot of good signs with the way that Coutinho and Firmino played. I think maybe Firmino, at the first couple of games, he's been coming off the bench. Not seen too much from him, but in that game, he looked like a really bright player. Coutinho, as we know, is just the guy who makes them tick. And I think that Benteke, player who certainly, I wouldn't say has as much talent, natural talent, as Balotelli, but he's going to give you a lot more. Simply as a team, he brought people into play. He was bullying poor Chambers at times, who actually did well to recover in the second half, I think, given that he had such a torrid first half, one of the worst individual performances I think you'll see from a young player. But Wenger easily could have taken him off. He said that. Instead, he kept him on. So I think that there were bright signs for Liverpool. I think the way that they have been defending the first two games, you might have thought, okay, they played Stoke and Bournemouth, but this is the game where it's going to come unstuck.
Yeah.
But overall, I think that Arsenal didn't really have too many chances beyond.
Although there was that goal they scored, which should have actually stood.
They should have had a goal that.
For the second week in a row, Liverpool had an offside decision go their way.
And a goal that should have gone against them as well, that should have stood, given that Bournemouth scored a good goal. But I think the defence is playing better than it was last season. I think that's probably partly to do with the fact that the two fullbacks are playing very well. Klein,
right.
One of the best right backs in the country. And Gomez, obviously at very early days, looks like a fine player though
been
for the
outstanding.
Future.
Outstanding, Gomez, not least for the fact that he's not left footed and he's not really supposed to be a left back. But he brings so much more stability to the back line.
That lovely back heel he did as well, that nobody else read at all, and he had to go and clear it up himself.
Yeah. Yeah, that was very nice. But also there was a better balance maybe to the midfield. I think that with Chan and Lucas playing, Lucas was able to protect defence better than maybe certain marauding captains might have done in the past couple of seasons.
And do you know what Brendan Rodgers called it?
Pushed Milner forward as well. And Milner was, you know, he's been a very influential player for City at times.
Is there any chance that Brendan Rodgers called it an outstanding performance?
He said outstanding. That's the word he used. We'll talk about Arsenal in a second. Quick word, though, on Liverpool's next game, which sees them host West Ham. Do you know when West Ham last won at Anfield, Jacob?
Yeah.
When?
1963.
There you go.
Do you know who scored?
No.
Jeff Hurst in Martin
Peters. Did he?
I told Martin Peters last season that he scored in that game.
Yeah.
He was very perturbed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why?
Because he wanted to tell the tape. We were at a table and it was before the Liverpool game, and he came over and he was the hospitality man who has to go around the table and tell everybody that he scored the last time when... And I said, "Oh, you did it!" And he sort of stood there and looked at me for a while. I think he was slightly impressed.
Right.
Is it true that I've heard rumour that you can tell me any West Ham result from your lifetime, and possibly beyond as well?
Not lifetime, but say since 98.
Well, that would make a fascinating.
That would make a
pod.
Really good pod. Yeah. Just an hour of that.
What we could do is get Jacob in and fire questions of that. He'll get him, and then get Rob Smythe in. And ask him the batting averages of international cricketers and see who gets one wrong first.
I mean,
it could be a very, very long day.
A long day, he said, attempting to segue. For West Ham, of course, this weekend. Liverpool have been, for whatever reason, having clean sheets. West Ham failing to score in six of their last seven visits to Anfield, reeling from that horrific display against Bournemouth.
Yeah, that was, without wishing to be cruel on Sunderland, it was a little bit like watching Sunderland at their worst, West Ham. You know, I was reminded of, say, them against Aston Villa in the first half last season when they were 4-0 down, or indeed against Norwich a couple of weeks ago. It was kind of that bad, where Bournemouth could easily have been 3-4-5 up at half time, and it was only their profligacy and
well, you think of those Liverpool players you mentioned, like Benteke and Coutinho and maybe Firmino as well. Are they going to fill their boots against these Hammers?
Well, what West Ham might look to is that they managed to go to Arsenal and win. And I suppose an interesting little aspect this season is that only six teams have won at home so far. So perhaps they'll think that they could do something at Anfield. But the way they defended on Saturday was absolutely dreadful. If you take away the individual errors from Cresswell and Jenkinson, it was just a collective mishap from everybody.
All right. There's a stat that a lot of people have been commenting on. 30 games so far and only six home victories. Is that something to do with support? About home support, changing the nature of home support or the nature of refereeing? Or is it just one of those quirks and we'll move on?
I think I'd want to see a bigger sample size, also the clubs that you would expect to lose have all improved because there's so much money coming in over the summer. The quality of players going to what you would ordinarily call mid-ranking sides, I think, has mixed it up a bit.
Yeah, right. I mean, there were boos from the West Ham fans after about 25 minutes. The first one was for the water break because they didn't think there should be a water break after 20 minutes, which maybe you could see a point. It wasn't that hot. And then it was when they just kept giving the ball to Bournemouth in the final third.
If you can have a winter, if you can have a water break because it's a bit warm, surely, you know, when it gets around to January, especially as we know in Stoke, can we not just have a little bit of a break for some hot cocoa and stuff just to get
each
warm fluids in?
Chucking on plastic bottles full of Bovril.
Yeah.
Players huddle around
a brazier
for a couple of minutes.
That'd be nice.
Warm their hands.
I still want to talk about Arsenal. I think we can just about squeeze this in to part one. Because here's some stats. They failed to score in five of their last six home matches. Did you know that no team in the Premier League has had more shots than Arsenal, 64, and no team in the Premier League has scored fewer goals than Arsenal, 2.
I'll give you another stat.
All right, then.
Against Liverpool, on Monday. They gave the ball away inside their own half 20 times in the opening 45 minutes.
20 times?
20.
I'll give you another stat, Barry.
Oh, go on.
Oh, what do you got in?
I was just going to say that's exactly what Liverpool did last time they were there.
All right.
Gave the ball away repeatedly in their own half.
Here's another stat, and this, Gary Neville might appreciate this. Telegraph was ranking the average height of teams, at least the outfield players, because goalkeeper's kind of a separate category. They are the smallest outfield in the Premier League. Number one, in terms of average height of outfield players, West Brom, although I don't know if that's because they play at the Hawthorn, so they have that extra advantage. Stoke, in a worrying sign for English football traditions, have tumbled to sixth.
What?
Well, that explains an awful lot. Anyway, Arsenal are going to go to Newcastle. I've got to check where they are on the list. Barry.
There seems to be what seems suspiciously like the smell of optimism in the air around Newcastle. They've got their new signing, Florian Thauvin, who's already become a bit of a hero.
What, for missing a winning goal?
Well, he got a goal and three assists against Northampton.
Oh, did he?
Against
One
Cup in an hour.
Wow.
It looks like he'll make his first start against Arsenal. He's already, and this is sort of worrying, but he's already been likened to sort of Lauren Robert and David Ginola.
Right. That is worrying. Fantastic though his performance was. I doubt it matched Hatem Ben Arfa's wonderful goal for Nice last weekend. But you think this could be a big weekend for him as they take on an Arsenal side that's won seven of the last games with Newcastle?
It may not be. I'm just looking forward to seeing him play.
Mm. Well, Wenger this morning said that Mertesacker will probably still be out and Koscielny looks like a big doubt as well. So again, it will be Gabriel and Chambers together. So
Wow. That
is something for Newcastle to play on, perhaps. Well, I mean, they're both good players, but as a partnership, not tested hugely yet.
Right, they look quite entertaining, and not in the best, in the right way on Monday. Yeah, they're kind of a guarantee that things will happen.
Mm.
Yeah, which things we still don't know. Well, that really is time for us to take a quick pause, and then we'll be back with other things.
Producer Ben here, listeners, reminding you that the Football Weekly Roadshow is headed your way. We'll be in the Northwest in September for a night of ungodly football frolics at Manchester Cathedral. That's part of the Manchester Football Writing Festival. And then in October, we're headed to the seaside and a Friday night spot at the Brighton Comedy Festival. Badum and indeed Tish. We'll be announcing more dates and more destinations on our UK tour soon. For more information on all of the Football Weekly live events and to book your tickets, head to theguardian.com/guardianlive.
Hello, part two. You begin with Manchester City's game against Watford. Watford haven't won at Manchester City since 1987. They probably haven't played there in a while. City have scored eight, conceded none this season. Have they shown any sign of weakness at all yet? Have you seen anything from City that made you think,
Not really. Maybe at the end of the Everton game where Everton had a couple of chances where they put on late pressure, but then City just went up the other end and scored. And that kind of happened against Chelsea as well, where they had a 20-minute wobble and Chelsea asserted themselves as the greatest team of all time, according to their website.
Yeah.
and then City went and scored two goals from that. So, no, City sometimes just have this thing where they take years off and they can't be bothered because they're Manchester City.
And they still finish second anyway.
And they still finish second and kind of outplay Chelsea in both games when they play them, when they can be bothered to pull the finger out. And now they decided, yeah, let's go for the title this season.
Something weird's happening. Even Kolarov looks brilliant. The period that you're talking about where Chelsea suddenly went dominant in that game was really just an opportunity to showcase how much better company a Mangala are this season. Hart hasn't made any hideous rickets, to the best of my memory. Sterling, while he hasn't scored yet, is causing so much chaos that nobody's picking up anyone else.
And now you're going to throw in Kevin De Bruyne.
Yes.
De Bruyne, who left England, a year ago?
January, a little bit more? 2014.
For £18 million, and he's now coming back for £54 million. That's a net profit, net profit fans, for a Wolfsburg of... £36 million. Wow, two big questions here. One, here's CEM, or Chris E.M. McKeague. Chrissy McKee. I'm confused with all these transfers and rumours. What has happened to financial fair play rules? Quietly scrap. The other big question is, how actually do we pronounce Kevin De Bruyne? Archon Lobo says it's pronounced De Bruyne, not De Bruyne. Wow. Next time we see Rafa Honigstein, we'll get his take on that. Kevin didn't have the best of games in his farewell to Wolfsburg, did he?
No, I think that move was affecting him. Indeed, the manager and sporting director said afterwards that he looked disturbed. There was one incredible cross in from the right flank, which he did so well to pick out the uppermost point of the floodlights, that the Cologne fans were just falling about laughing at. And then in the 90th minute, he was through one-on-one with the goalkeeper, only to spurn that chance and the follow-up that came. He did not look happy or composed.
Right. That said, though, last season he was the Bundesliga's player of the year. How does he fit into that Man City lineup? Who drops out to make way?
Navas. Sterling's in brilliant form. Silva's in brilliant form. Navas is Navas.
So what does De Bruyne or De Bruyne, what does Kevin offer you that the Navas doesn't?
Well, if his crossing improves from the way it was last weekend, then crosses which might at least hit the target. Right. But he's one of those mercurial talents who opens things up. And
he's one of those kind of jinking Ala Hazard mercurial talents. He also has got an absolute cannon of a foot.
He's a fantastic attacking midfielder when his head's in the right place. It wasn't at Chelsea. He didn't particularly appreciate being shifted around the squad so much. But if he's made to feel warm and loved at Manchester City, should be very good.
Right. The question about financial fair play, has it just gone away now? And we raised this the other day, and I asked somebody else, and they said, no, it hasn't, and it's going to come back and bite City. But I can't believe they're doing all of this without knowing.
They've made one adjustment to take into account new owners coming through if they were going to invest into making the club better than certain allowances would be made. But there are so many court cases in the pipeline against it that it feels like the thin end of the wedge, and it feels like no one's really listening anymore.
Well, this summer, Archie Rintoot pointing out, with the De Bruyne deal and the Son one, if it goes through to Spurs, Premier League will have bought 10 Bundesliga players for a grand total of 220 million euros. I mean, there is a broader issue here, which we might come on to maybe next week when there's an international break heading our way, about the way that the amount of money swamping the Premier League is affecting the rest of Europe, and whether it's an entirely positive thing. But for now, let's just say that assuming anyone's left, there are some big games this weekend in the Bundesliga. Schalke taking on Wolfsburg. Oh, both clubs have players who may be on the mood even, you know, before you hear this. Perisic and Draxler. Draxler of Schalke, who and indeed Perisic, they might both be heading to Serie A. I do hope so. More Champions League, people. Celtic. Oh my, Barry. Fancy a fit bar corner on Brave Celtic's Brave Collapse away at Malmo?
There wasn't anything even remotely brave about it.
Pretty brave of the referees to not allow that goal that they scored.
Well,
brave of Lee Griffiths to knee his opponent in the and brave of Chris Sutton to complain about the opponent going down after he'd been kneed in the whatnot by Lee Griffiths off the
ball.
Well,
funnily enough, I thought I was doing the minute by minute report, and I thought I saw Lee Griffiths run over and knee his opponent in the swingers, and then I thought, no, there's no way he could possibly have just done that. I must have got that wrong. And then I heard Chris Sutton, who was doing the co-coms, saying that, you know, that your man was play acting.
Hey, don't expect this kind of thing from Swedes, he said.
And so I thought, yeah, clearly I did imagine it. Right. And then I saw a replay at halftime and I couldn't believe it. He was a very lucky boy.
Yeah.
Very lucky to stay on. And that would have been a completely moronic sending off. You know, there was absolutely no need for it, and his team in trouble and leaving them at 10 men. But yes, Celtic, they had a goal disallowed, they could point to that, and they had a couple of good chances, they can point to that, but their performance was pretty diabolical, and I don't think they can have any complaints if they look at the big picture about going out. We said on Monday they could be in trouble, and it duly came to pass. They were really ponderous in midfield, slow moving the ball around. Their defending at set pieces is absolutely atrocious, to the point of comical. They had Charlie Mulgrew playing at left back, and he was just giving the run around. They made Marcus Rosenberg, who's the striker who was back from Malmo, they made himself and that fella that couldn't get a game in their team last year look like absolute world beaters. And I don't think they can complain. They justifiably lost. I very much, I don't watch enough of Celtic to know how good or bad they are, but I'd be surprised if they're that bad on a regular basis.
Mm.
But yeah, they've made, appear to have made no progress under Ronnie Delia, and I'd say their fans are getting very impatient with him. Because he said after they failed to beat Maribor last year, look, judge me this time next year.
Oh.
The exact same thing has happened to them again, so I would imagine the jury is out and won't take long to arrive at its decision.
Mm. Elsewhere, collapse of the week was probably Sporting. Do you remember they had that grudge match thing going on with CSKA Moscow, who in 2005, 10 years ago, had played them in the UEFA Cup final in Sporting's own stadium. Sporting were a goal up at half time, but then ended up losing 3-1 anyway. This time around, Sporting had them, beat them at home, and then they were a goal up at half time away at CSKA, but ended up losing 3-1 again. Eerie stuff. So they're out into the Europa League. CSKA goes through. Leverkusen absolutely destroyed Lazio, exactly as I predicted on Monday. Well, ish. And they look very good. They look very good. And Lazio looked terrible. Mm. They were very timorous wee beasties. Although, yeah, no question about that. And
Sorry, just on the subject of wee beasties and feedback corner.
Oh, yeah.
If anyone hasn't seen it yet, the online rant posted by YouTube, it's on YouTube, by Kilmarnock fan Gordon Soares after his team got beaten 4-0 at home by Ross County last Saturday is a sight to behold.
All right.
But put your hands over your any kiddies' ears if they're in the room.
Not what is it?
NSFW.
There you go. This weekend in Italy, all sorts of exciting things. Mentioned the Bundesliga once before, but Roma are taking on Juve early on Sunday. Both teams failed to get a win in their opening weekend. Bad news for Roma, and I think fans of football in general. Kevin Strootman looks like he's going to have a third operation now on his knee. So, yeah. Oh, and Balotelli, as indeed everyone's been talking about. Balotelli back at Milan.
Have you seen the various clauses and conditions they've put in his contract? He's not allowed smoke,
which
he shouldn't do anyway. But if he's a regular smoker, that's easier said than done. Not smoking. he's not allowed to have overly fancy hairstyles. Mm. I don't know how they're going to judge this. celebrity hairdresser Nicky Clark in to sort of stroke his chin and go, maybe a little less gel or, And he's not allowed to dress too flamboyantly. So
So they'll have him in the squad as long as he doesn't make the cut, conversely. To be honest, I was a bit down on this, but part of me then thought, there's still a player there. Mm. It'd be great to see him do well again. And I know he's done this before, but he's had some fairly life-changing events happen to him over the summer, the death of his adoptive father and that. And
I think everyone he's made all the right noises here. Well,
There's a player in there. Somewhere there's a hell of a player
there.
Well, but, I used to always say the same thing about Nicholas Bentner, and I think I was wrong.
Scored a crucial goal at the weekend.
Didn't he?
Yeah.
And it was amazing from 9 inches out. 9 inches out, yeah. Well, anyway, Balotelli looks like might play this weekend for Milan. Might go straight into the lineup against Bologna. Although they're pretty well staffed up front with Luis Adriano and Bacca. Anyway, if you want, you can join the usual crew on Sunday for Roma Juve, and then we'll follow that up with Monaco PSG. Boom.
I will be able to join you now.
All right. And
signed up.
In a kind of football sandwich in between, we'll have all the goals from the other games in Germany and France. All the Italian games are being played pretty much on Sunday night, so we'll fly those goals in as they happen. Technology, eh? Sounds a hell of a Sunday evening, that.
Mm.
Let's have a post or two, eh? What do you think? We were talking about boy bands the other day.
Mm.
P. Daddy, among the many responding, he says, statistically, the worst boy band ever, and he provides a link to a report in The Independent of E17, who did a gig at Dublin's Academy at the weekend, an 800 capacity venue. 30 people showed up, and there's one man standing in the kind of mosh pit, one man, while three of the original lineup performed. Neither Tony Mortimer nor Brian Harvey were there.
I'm not having that. I'm sorry, because I'd actually go so far as to say E17 were better than Blue and possibly the best.
Well, I think he's talking about now, this incarnation of E17 that's essentially just the people who did those hand shapes and war.
Is was there really a Christmas funny? Song that wasn't a Christmas song?
Stay Now.
That is a belting tune.
But they just added the bells on afterwards, didn't they? Because it was supposed to come out in the summer. But they realised it was coming out perilously close to Christmas, so they added some Christmas bells.
Put some bells on it.
And it became Christmas number one.
That's a lack of foresight. Or actually, they sorted out. Mark Cole says, after rating boy bands on Monday, time to do girl groups. Girl groups. Do you have any strong... I don't feel as strongly about girl groups.
I have a very soft spot for Atomic Kitten. Because Liz McLaren once told me I had the nicest accent she'd ever heard.
Really? Mm. How about that? I would say the worst girl band, it was probably Bewitched. Do you remember that?
Oh, God, yeah.
There's a lot of denim there.
Thanks for that question, Mark Cole. You've taken this in exciting new directions. Also, on the subject of great goals... here's Trolls Christensen saying, Morten Nordstrand, you should talk about his amazing overhead last minute equaliser for AGF against FCK Copenhagen. I mention that because it's kind of that's terrific nominative determinism, isn't it? A man posting messages on Twitter with the first name of Trolls. although it wasn't my favourite bit of nominative determinism this week. That's when I noticed that Nice have a footballer by the name of Alassana Player. So they have a player called Player.
Bases covered.
Some people would say that the town of Nice itself is kind of nominative deterministically.
I went there 2 years ago and I can confirm it is.
All right. Loads more football to talk about after this. Hey-ho. We haven't talked about Chelsea yet. Are they buying... Is that Stones thing? Is that happening? John Stones?
Maybe not after last night.
What happened last night?
Everton were 2-0 down at Barnsley, John Stones' former club, and there was a amusing video that did the rounds of him. Maybe it was a little bit unfair, but sort of not making the greatest effort to block a shot that went in for a Barnsley player. Perhaps, as someone put it to me on Twitter, he was not expecting the player to scuff the shot. He was expecting him to get it off the ground, but he kind of jumped over it. Either way, it wasn't great defending. Maybe if you don't accuse him of a lack of focus, but it wasn't great defending, though. Everton were 2-0 down. Eventually, they came back to win 5-3 to eventually avoid embarrassment. I think that would have been if they'd managed to go out to Barnsley, I think the pressure really would have been on Martinez and Bill Kamara again.
Barnsley very nearly made it 4-4. That outrageous shot from about 35 yards at Cannon off the crossbar. So it was pretty tight all the way to the end. 5-3 almost makes it look kind of convincing, but it was a really wobbly day. And the worst thing for Stones was that him and Jagielka were there as a kind of the solid foundation so that they could experiment elsewhere around the team, and it looked really bad.
Chelsea this week, on the subject of Chelsea transfers, I saw Marco Marin this week went out on loan. I was convinced that he had left around 7 years ago, Chelsea, and he's now gone to Trabzonspor on loan. So maybe anyone who was being linked with Chelsea this summer might look at whether their career might very well hit something of
a... It's a certain kind of player, though, that they do that to, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I would expect with Stones, they certainly see him as more one for the future.
Yeah.
Would Stones himself not look at Chelsea's recent performances and go, I could get in that team. I could play in that team. I'm better than John Terry is at the moment.
Better than Kurt
I'd
Zuma.
Like to live in Esher. Next to Sandown Racecourse.
I can think of a lot of reasons that he might wish to make the move, and the suggestions are that he is trying to force it through, but I don't know.
Roberto Martinez, after that game last night, said, not happening, some things money can't buy, and
really?
John Stones is one of them.
All right, well, good for you, Everton. Should we talk Everton, or should we talk about Chelsea Crystal Palace?
I think Chelsea Crystal Palace is going to be an interesting game, because it looks like... John Terry's out, for starters. It looks like Ivanovic... Well, what's either going to happen is Ivanovic will keep his place, and he's been struggling badly. Mm. And Crystal Palace are, you know, wingtastic.
Yeah.
They've got three wingers in their team. That's how wingtastic they are. And if Ivanovic is dropped, it's assumed that Baba Rachman will come in at left back, and Cesar Azpilicueta will move to right back. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they get on against Chelsea's fantastic wingers.
Yeah, a Chelsea side that's allowing opponents.
Or sorry, did I say Crystal Palace's fantastic wingers?
And Chelsea's less than
wingtastic fullbacks.
Yeah, but Chelsea, the stats tell us, have offered their opponents more shots on goal than any other. They allow opponents to create more chances than any other Premier League side at the moment, which is just mind-boggling. West Brom had 15 shots on goal, apparently, in the clash last weekend. And as you mentioned, Palace are a fairly lively bunch, although they needed extra time to get past Shrewsbury in the Cup.
Loads of teams needed extra time this week.
They might be a bit tired, though.
Yeah, I think Villa, it's the kind of week where you can catch a Premier League team.
It's a funny performance by Palace on Saturday as well, because they weren't actually very good for much of the game, and yet they were still better than Villa, and there was still so much promise there. They had Bakary Sakho was kind of wild, but kept making things happen.
Like a Mustang.
I think he was. Like one that cannot be tamed. At the back, it's Land of the Giants, so Diogo Costa's going to be in for a bit of a battle there. And then there's just pace everywhere. Gale and Tahar. I'm not sure if Bolasie will be back because his father passed away, so that was why he was out of the squad last week.
But somebody was posting on the message boards actually about the word pace and how it's basically just, it's become a bit like the Premier League of words about speed. It's now the only, it's become the dominant force in that whole kind of category of the footballing argot.
So say velocity.
We don't see somebody is fast or quick anymore. So he's got pace.
Rapidity.
Yeah. Fleet of foot.
Nice. Yeah. Anyway, so Chelsea Palace?
I could see that being a draw as well. I see Palace causing them all kinds of problems.
I think, yeah, you could.
You want to call it, don't you, Jacob?
No, not massively.
No, okay.
Not so it comes back, but Chelsea with Pedro in the side last week were much better going forward than they had been in the previous two games. So perhaps they've got a bit of their zip back there. Mm.
Yeah, Palace would certainly give them problems. I think Palace will definitely score at least one goal. I'm not going to say whether they win, lose or draw, but I'm pretty sure they'll get a goal or two.
All right.
I mean, Chelsea did improve against West Brom, but they were far from convincing.
Tell you what should be a good game this weekend. Bournemouth-Leicester. Bournemouth-Leicester. Are you going to... Jacob, maybe. You see Bournemouth pretty much every week, don't you?
I've seen them twice.
Right.
And they were on television the other week.
Two of the top managers in three times.
Yeah.
I'm excited by the... Well, producer Pete was asking what kind of team talk you think Eddie Howe gives.
A very nice one.
He's
really nice. Yeah.
No kind of up and at 'em, stick it in the mixers there.
I wouldn't have thought so with Eddie Howe. I mean, I imagine he's a very professional man and everything and gets his message across. Mm. He's very clever, Eddie Howe.
I'd like to have a kind of split screen with him, his team talk, and the Claudio Ranieri's on the other side, in which he kind of...
I reckon they're both probably quite similar.
Really?
Understated.
But Ranieri cannot speak English. I think he just goes around with a packet of biscuits and makes kind of encouraging noises. And
well, I'd say they both don't say much, to be honest, and probably do most of their talking on the training ground. And work is done before they get to the... And I think in one of Stuart James's features where he stalks managers and follows them around at work for a day, I think Eddie Howe said he kind of keeps everything pretty simple, you know, just because if you fill players' heads with too much information right before the game, you're just going to confuse them, which is fair enough.
That sounds fair, yeah. Both looking good. Although Bournemouth, to be fair, were aided massively in getting that 4-3 win by your lot.
Yeah, but they also, in that game, they had a 10-minute, 15-minute period where they kind of just let West Ham back into it. West Ham didn't create really anything out of good play. It was a penalty that was a stupid foul by Josh King and a long throw followed by the Bournemouth players not reacting. It wasn't like they were massively outplayed. They were put under pressure. And Howe said not impressed with the way they managed the game in that period. But then whenever the game was actually in the balance, Bournemouth were always the better team, always in control. They have they play 4-4-2. Everybody knows what they're meant to do. They have a style of playing. And I think sometimes with a lot of teams, you can't really tell from the stands what it is they're trying to do. That's certainly what I would say about Bilic and West Ham at the moment. Mm. Whereas at Bournemouth, you can easily see playing with wingers, two guys controlling it in the middle, and just two very, very quick forwards up front who have good movement. And then linking, that's the first game I think I've seen King and Wilson properly link up and cause problems. The first, because obviously King is a new signing from Blackburn, whereas Wilson had been there for for a year. I think it's quite hard sometimes to fit into the Bournemouth style of play straight away, but that was the first time maybe those two linked up and showed an understanding. And Wilson last season was really, really good. He's one of those players, I think, strikers who has time in the area and is able to just take a moment and decide what he wants to do. So I think he will score goals this season. He'd been good already without scoring.
Right.
So move to Liverpool at the end of the season?
Yeah,
mate. £8.5 million.
Yeah. I imagine there'll be some call at some point this season for him to be in the England squad.
Right. Well, CalDog1984 already in on that one. He said 21 goals for Coventry season, the season before joining Bournemouth. 20 goals the following season and already on 3. Can call up for England be sooner rather than later. Absolutely. Bournemouth, of course, scored another 4 goals this midweek when they did Hartlepool in that League Cup that you keep banging on about. 4-0 there, yep. And, but Leicester, no team in the Premier League has had more wins or scored more points, etc., or grabbed more points since the start of April than Leicester. No one, not Chelsea, not Man City. Well, as I say, no one. That pretty much encapsulates it. And they're looking really exciting. Riyad Mahrez with 6 goals in 6 matches. And here's and Joe Dudu. We've got a hat-trick for Leicester against Bury midweek and a 4-1 win. Oliver Bunting's got a post. He says Leicester's Dudu needs to join up with West Brom's Rondon. Then you really have got a chant. Remember that chant we had?
Yes.
Dudu, I think. I think it's Dudu, not Dudu. It's Dudu from the way the O's are configured. Wow, that's going to be an exciting game. Don't know how it's going to finish.
The battle of teams with two, both of them have fast wingers. Max Gradle was very good against West Ham on Saturday, and then Albrighton and Myers are playing so well for Leicester since the start of April. Also, Bournemouth have Matt Ritchie, so yeah.
Well,
there's a lot to be said for a good winger.
There isn't there. There's loads more games still got to go, but listeners, I know you've got
if
things to do. So let's.
And Rondon, say we're playing against each other and got in a bout of fisticuffs and we're separated by refereeing.
Yes.
Phil Don.
If that would have happened.
To do Don Rondon.
Yeah, but that wouldn't be as good as just them on together, would it?
No, you need an extra.
To do Ron Don.
To do Ron Don. No, you need another.
Oh, to do Ron Don.
Doesn't scan.
Yeah, I'm quite happy with it as it is. But
I'm just striving for perfection.
Right,
it's ambitious.
Well, we'll see who else they sign. As I say, loads of other games, listeners. I don't want to shortchange fans of Spurs, Everton, Villa, Sunderland, Saints, Norwich, or Stoke, West Brom. Least of all them. But I don't know how much time we've got. Let's bang through some of these. Saints against Norwich. Saints going to be tired from Thursday night's trip to Midtjylland, aren't they? And they're in all sorts of trouble. And Norwich have scored in all 3 league starts. And quick line there, Jacob. Norwich?
Yeah, Norwich have surprised me with the creativity they've shown so far. I thought they hadn't really done enough in the transfer market, but been very, very positive so far. And certainly they've got a very impressive young manager.
Brilliant. Villa Sunderland, is that a 6-pointer, Barry?
I was just going to say, first 6-pointer of the season. Scott Sinclair are probably going to come in for Villa. He scored a hat-trick in the League Cup. Gabby Bonlahore has been incurring the wrath of the Holt end and will probably be put on the bench.
Defoe got a hat-trick midweek as well.
He did. Well, was it him or did he get his personal assistant to score it for him? Because his personal assistant seems to be, you know, tasked with doing everything else in his life.
Yeah.
From, you know, emptying the cat's litter tray to promoting his brand and developing his apps.
And his fragrance as well.
And his fragrance.
Yeah.
Just one quick thing. Jack Rodwell, I read an interview with him during the week, and he was talking about Lyndon Gooch and Duncan Watmore, two young lads who played for Sunderland. Well, Watmore's played a couple of times from this season, and he said that what I thought was a curious thing that possibly sums up what everything that's wrong at Sunderland. He said they want to impress, obviously, and they'll run a bit more, which suggests, you know, senior players who are in the team can't be bothered with running because they don't need to impress. And I think that little snippet just tells you everything you need to know about Sunderland Football Club.
Well, Dick Advocaat maybe has the same concerns, and there's been fresh rumours that he's about to rethink his decision to stay on there at the Stadium of Light. And there's Kevin Nolan out of contract or leaving West Ham
suddenly. Left.
Has left.
Yes.
So that, because he played up front from last weekend.
Yes, and was taken off at half time.
And hasn't come back since.
Well, he has been back training, right. But no, last night they reached a mutual agreement. I'm not sure if he could, I'm not sure if I've seen him at Sunderland given his Newcastle
right.
past.
Just if Big Sam was to turn up there, which, you know.
Well, yeah.
Mm.
He's preparing himself, isn't he? He's doing the rounds of the TV studios.
Yep.
Putting himself in position
wearing
for the first struggle.
Wearing very controversial
club.
Shoes.
Wow, it's not just
that
the
shoes.
That
was amazing. That was
I didn't see the shoes. Up. What were the shoes?
Well, he pitched up on Fantasy Football, which our chum Max Rushton is now presenting with Paul Merson. And he looked like he'd been dragged off the golf course. So he had this colourful short-sleeved shirt on.
A yachting shirt.
Mm. And then a pair of trousers that were a bit too short, brown trousers, and then matching brown shoes. But you couldn't tell, and like me and a pal were watching it, and we actually paused the TV and went up to look at the screen because we couldn't decide whether he was wearing brown shoes, no socks, and two short trousers, or brown boots and two short trousers, or just a pair of wooden legs.
Well, perhaps he just likes you know, being with a mismatched outfit, in which case, but move to Sunderland would be perfect.
Yeah, I can confirm, actually. I use my celebrity contacts to confirm that it was shoes, no socks, and two short trousers,
Jeepers.
If anyone was interested.
All right, let's hope he gets a job, and soon. Spurs-Everton, more counter-attacking joy for the Toffees, do you think? After they went to Saints and tore them one on the break?
Well, if they can sort that defence out from the other night, possibly. Tottenham don't seem to have woken up yet. Seem to be leaving all their shopping until the last minute again. Difficult team to read. 0-0 for me.
Although they have picked up Son, who, being a kind of vaguely wideish midfielder, is exactly the kind of player that they've been lacking all this time, though.
I like him
finally
a lot.
Answered that.
I like him a lot. He's a very exciting player. Lots of tricks, opens games up, does all the things that Lamella was supposed to do on a consistent basis for the last couple of years. But it's Tottenham, isn't it? They'll break him. They'll find a way to break him somehow.
Right. Well, that only leaves us with, there we are, listeners, we made it. Stoke against West Brom.
Bojan's back.
Oh.
Yeah.
Stoke are not as tall as they were. That's what I've got on this.
Yeah. Stoke needed penalties
to get
Luton.
Past. Right.
Yeah.
And so did West Brom against Port Vale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they might both be tired, is what you mean.
They're going to be, you know.
It's Tony Pulis.
Well, West Brom have been struggling. And
But didn't they sparkled a bit against Chelsea, didn't they?
In defeat, yeah, I thought they gave a good account of themselves. It's a hard one to read. I mean, Stoke got absolutely battered by Norwich last week, even though they got away with a point. You know, I've heard several of their players admit, you know, that they were lucky to get away with a point. It's a hard one to call. Yeah, I'll go draw.
Ian, what's not going to happen?
Stoke are going to click at some point. I reckon this is a good weekend for it to happen. Stoke win 2-0.
I reckon that Stoke have. They've thrown the baby out with the bathwater. That's my call on Stoke, based purely on a kind of very cursory examination of their performances so far.
Because they've lost their innate Stokiness.
They've lost their.
I think they're struggling to find the balance of steel and fancy dandy.
They don't have any steel anymore to balance with. Who have they got?
We've got Jonathan Walters.
There you go.
Only just.
Yeah, and he wants to leave.
Mm.
Well, no, he wants to stay. But
it took so long to bake it.
Not on the terms.
And I'll never have that recipe again. That's Stoke for me. Right. Anyway, that's it for today's Football Weekly Extra. Many thanks for being with us, Barry, Jacob, Ian, producer Pete, who's going to give way to the return of Ben on Monday. We're in Manchester next week, but before that, we're going to be here on Monday, so listeners, will see you then. It's a bank holiday, but we will be here. And once again, we'll be on the wrong side of a deadline, or the wrong side of some major news. This time, it'll be the end of the transfer deadline day thing. Anyway, that's it for now. Have a super weekend. Catch up with you on Monday.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Their designer templates let you easily create a unique and beautiful website that looks perfect on any device. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.